Good morning and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg and we're live for a half hour each weekday morning at this time to take your calls. If you are curious about something in the Bible and you'd like to ask a question about that or about the Christian life or faith or about your own spiritual journey, feel free to call and we can talk about those things together here. If you have an alternate viewpoint from that of the host and would like to balance comment, please do so. In any case, you can use this phone number to get through today. The number is 1-800-227-5278. That's 800-227-5278. Our first caller today is Sandy from San Jose, California. Sandy, how are you doing? Good to hear from you.
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate your ministry as always. Hey, this weekend in a sermon from our pastor, they went over John 21:14, those passages a little bit where, you know, Jesus asked Peter, will you love me? And he said he would. Will you love me? I will. And then will you love me? And he will. Well, what he pointed out, which I never thought about, is the first love that Jesus asked is, will you agape me? And Peter comes back with phileo. Is that the right word? Phileo?
That's right.
And then, again, it was agape, phileo, and then finally Jesus got to phileo. So when Jesus asks us for the third time, he's going to the phileo, and it seems to me, and I've never heard this before, that God wanted him to love him, but Peter wasn't at the point to love him enough. And so Jesus kind of took it a step down and says, okay, if you can love me at that level, that's cool. Am I reading that right? You understand what I'm
saying?
Maybe.
That point is often made. It doesn't come out in the English translation, but in the English translation, three times in a row, Jesus asked Peter, do you love me?
Right.
And three times Peter affirms that he loves Jesus, but in the Greek, there are two different words for love, phileo and agape. And in the first two cases, Jesus said, do you agape me? And Peter's response was, Lord, I phileo you. And so Jesus took it down a notch and said, well, do you phileo me?
Right.
And Peter again affirmed that he did phileo him. So the first two times Jesus asked about agape, and the last time he said phileo, which is the word that Peter was using all along. Now, most teachers say that agape is a higher form of love than phileo, and therefore
right.
Jesus was asking for the highest form of love, and Peter wasn't able to affirm that, and so Jesus was willing to settle, as it were, for phileo. Now, phileo is in the Greek language, a term that refers to a love such as family members have toward each other. In fact, we find it as the root. It's the root of Philadelphia. Philadelphia.
Means of love.
Brotherly love.
Brotherly love.
So, phileo then speaks of, you know, a very strong, affectionate family kind of affection, like you'd have for a brother or a family member.
Right.
It's not nothing. It's something.
Right.
You know, but in fact, the Bible tells us to have brotherly love toward each other. In 2 Peter 1, it says, add brotherly love and add to that agape. Philadelphia first and then agape. It has to be added to that. So agape seems to be treated as if it's a notch above, you know.
Right.
Now, agape is a word, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert about this, but as I understand it, the word agape wasn't really used much in the Greek language until the New Testament was written. It's sort of a distinctly Christian word, and it's a word for love. It always refers to, you know, God's love, that is God's love for us, and it also refers to the love that we are to have, especially as a fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is agape. So, agape is a kind of a divine love. Usually, it is said to be an unconditional love. I don't know that the word unconditional necessarily is inherent in the word agape any more than it would be in phileo. You know, I mean, you love your family members sort of unconditionally, too.
Right.
It may be more of a preacher's point than a lexical point.
That's right.
To say that agape, yeah, that agape means unconditional love. But in the New Testament, the word agape does seem to be, connected with divine love. of some kind. I mean, God's love, Jesus' love. And it's also the love that Christians are to have, but that's supposed to be divine also, because it's the fruit of the Spirit. So it's not like we're supposed to be able to generate
that. You think he was taken and down a notch? I mean, or is it really hard to really totally say that? I mean, it was kind of encouraging, because it's like, God, I can't quite live up to where you want me to be, and I'm just being honest. I'm being straight, you know? And he says, okay, I get it. You know, that's cool. So can we look at it that way, or is that really not appropriate?
Well, the fact that God is willing to meet us in one sense at our level where we are, I would say, is seen in the whole enterprise of the incarnation. You know, that God, who had been speaking from heaven for thousands of years, would come down and grovel with us here in the mud, as in the dust of human flesh. It does speak of a great condescension on God's part, and if the most we can say about Jesus is, you know, I love you like I know how to love you, but not, I guess I probably don't love you like I should. It doesn't mean he's satisfied with that, but it also might suggest, well, he'll take it from here, you know.
Right.
He'll start where you are and work up from there. Although in my own thinking, as I think of that series of questions that Jesus asked, Peter affirmed that he had this love phileo for Jesus, though he did not apparently feel like he could confirm agape. But then when Jesus said, do you phileo me? It almost sounds like he's even challenging that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you even love me that much?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure. Now there's another, spanner in the works here, and that is that
Spanner? What word did you use?
A spanner, like a wrench in the works, yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
There's a problem here.
Okay.
And that is that Jesus and Peter probably weren't speaking Greek, so they probably didn't say
phileo
or agape. They were probably speaking Aramaic. Now,
great point.
there's a possibility. There's a possibility that they were using the same word all along in Aramaic. If that is true, then of course the translator, which would be John in this case, is recognizing nuances in Jesus' question that, and in Peter's answer, that he is representing in his Greek translation, but which might not have even come out in the Aramaic.
John wrote it in Greek? Is that correct? Is that right?
Well, yes. The Gospel of John was written in Greek originally. Yeah. So were the other Gospels, with the exception that Matthew's Gospel was preceded by Matthew. The Church Fathers say that Matthew first wrote a collection of the sayings of Jesus in Aramaic.
Right.
But that was probably not. Excuse me. That was probably not the same book we have as the Gospel of Matthew. As far as we know, the four Gospels as we have them came to us first in Greek, and therefore all the Gospel writers had to translate the words of Jesus from Aramaic into Greek in writing their Gospels in Greek. But if we understand that John was even present when this conversation was happening between Jesus and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know that because his presence is mentioned in the chapter there,
right? Mm-hmm.
Featured. I would say that whatever the Aramaic words they were using, and by the way, it's not impossible that they were speaking Greek, because they knew Greek.
Right. Well, he translated
it
too, so they...
Right, exactly. If they could translate into Greek, they knew Greek. But the likelihood is that they spoke in the language of their own country, commonly, which would be Aramaic. And I don't know enough about the nuances of the different words for love in Aramaic, but I guess what I'm saying is it may be that when Jesus and Peter had this conversation, that they spoke in Aramaic and actually used different words corresponding to phileo and agape in Greek.
Right.
Or
what a nuance.
Or may have used the same word throughout, but John, recognizing the nuances that were inherent in the conversation, reflected those in his Greek translation by using phileo and agape.
So many nuances. Very interesting. Are your lines, you got people waiting and back me?
Yeah, I actually do.
Okay.
I've got my lines full.
I'll go. Then I got another question.
You can call me this afternoon if you want, Sandy.
I may do that. Okay, thanks, Steve.
God bless you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Yeah, some of you may not know, we have an afternoon program also from 2 to 3. It's not on the same stations, but you can still call it. You can hear it from the website, thenarrowpath.com. Our next caller is Mike from Garden Grove. Mike, Welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Steve. I thought it might be appropriate to ask this question. Wasn't Jesus, he must have been crucified on Thursday and not on Friday. I get from, like in Luke chapter 24, verse 21, it says, and there are a couple of men here and they're talking to Jesus, and he says, and this is the third day. And if you read in Luke 24:1 and 24:13, that's the first day of the week. So if you count backwards, Saturday's one day, Friday's 2 days, Thursday would be 3 days. Also, you know, the 3 days and three nights, which Jesus said on Friday, that's no way that can be, you know, from Friday, say 5 or 6 p.m., till real early Sunday. I know preachers say, well, it's a Hebrew idiom. Well, to me, the Hebrew idiom makes no sense if it's a day and a half, you know. And if you focus on the three nights, that fits perfectly on Thursday. It'd be Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and then, you know, two full days and then partial of the third day. Anyway, I was wondering, I'd like to know your thoughts on that, if you ever really thought much about this.
Oh, yeah, I've given him plenty of thought to it. It certainly is a debated point as to whether Jesus was crucified on Friday or Thursday, or some would even say Wednesday.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, one thing you mentioned, and you said, you know, the idiom doesn't make much sense. That's the thing about idioms in many cases. In fact, that's why they are idioms. They are things that aren't literal. They are sayings. They are figures of speech that come into a culture or into a language. And the idioms that the preacher talked about that you mentioned is that it is known that among the Jews they did speak of a day and a night when they were speaking of any portion of a day for some reason. I'm not saying they always did, but they often did. For example, archaeologists have found in the area records of quarantines where a doctor would put a house under quarantine, and it was said to be for 5 days and five nights. But the actual days that were mentioned were three full days and parts of two at either end. But so it was really like 4 days and four nights plus a little more. But they called it 5 days and five nights because it was parts of 5 days. Now, it doesn't make sense to talk that way, but we can't go and complain about it with them. That's how we talked. Okay, so the question is not, is that the way we would talk? The question is that the way they talked? And apparently the answer is yes. So that even parts of 3 days could be referred to as 3 days and three nights. Now, Jesus said that as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale or the fish, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. That's in Matthew 12:40. That's the only time that Jesus used the phrase 3 days and three nights. But on several other occasions, he spoke about his time in the grave, and he said that he would rise on the third day. He said that at least four times. He said he's going to be crucified, he's going to be buried, and he's going to rise on the third day. Now, if he was talking about literally 3 days and three nights, if a man spends 3 days and three nights in the grave and comes out after that, that's the fourth day. And so we've got a bit of a problem here. To say that he rose on the third day requires that it cannot have been 3 days and three nights literally in the tomb. And so that is one reason why many people take it to be simply the Jewish idiom, that 3 days and three nights, a term that's used only once, is actually doesn't fit if he's going to rise on the third day, which is a term used frequently. Even after writing in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul said that Christ rose on the third day. So this is a complicated thing. Now, many people think that Thursday is the day that Jesus was crucified.
I do.
And that he rose... Yeah, and then he rose either on Sunday morning or even after sundown Saturday, because that would already be the first day of the week after sundown Saturday.
Right, that's right.
And when the women came to the tomb, it was about dawn. It was early, and the tomb was already empty. There's a lot of data that gets juggled around in the different calculations. There are people who really think that he was crucified on Wednesday. And I've read an elaborate argument for that based on the information. Thursday is another very common suggestion. And Friday also is, of course, traditional. My own leaning is toward Friday, though I'm flexible. It wouldn't bother me if it was Thursday or Wednesday. I mean, I don't care what day it was he was crucified. It's just a calendar date. It doesn't make any difference to me because I'm not a person who really gets hung up on holy days or things like that. So it could have been Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. My own leaning is toward Friday. I would consider that if he was buried on Friday before sundown, which he was, and then was in the tomb on Saturday until sundown, then he rose after that, then he would have been part of 3 days by Jewish reckoning, or as they might say it, 3 days and three nights, which doesn't make sense for them to say it that way, but that's how they talk. So, I mean, we can file a complaint against them if we want to, some 2,000 years delayed, but it's not going to change much about the way they talked.
Yeah, I agree with about 90% of your answers. On this, I stick with Thursday. I think you still need the Hebrew idiom for it to work for Thursday, but to me it fits perfectly for Thursday. It's still, you know, 3 nights and then 2 full days and then a partial of the third day. I reject Wednesday. That doesn't make any sense. Like you said, because Jesus said it in this, you know, on the third day, so for Wednesday it'd be like on the fourth day or more, so that doesn't make sense to me. And Friday, I just can't handle. A day and a half turns into 3 days. I just can't believe that.
So, all right. Okay. All right. I'm not going to require it.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, Mike. God bless you.
God bless.
Thanks for your call. All right. We'll talk next to John from San Diego. And we have a line open for you if you'd like to try to get in. It's 1-800-227-5278. My name is Steve Gregg. You're listening to The Narrow Path. The number is 1-800-227-5278. And, John, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hello. I was going to comment on the agape.
Uh-huh.
Well, the agape plus when he was talking, do you love me, Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. In the do you love me, Peter, yes, you know I love you, it looks like in the Greek they also play with the word no. Because Peter uses... what, parisma or something? You perceive it? There's a couple words
I'm not sure what you're referring to. What verse are we referring to about
back
the
to
word no? K-N-O-W?
Right. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Peter changes.
Well, let's see. The first time Peter didn't say, you know I love you. He just said, yes, Lord. Oh, yeah, you're right. You know I love... I'm sorry, my mistake. Go ahead. So is it the same
the
word
second
no,
time
or is it different?
Yeah, the third time it's a different word. It's he uses gnosko in the third time around. The first two times uses parida or something. What is it? Some other...
Oh, interesting. Okay. Now, that's something I've never heard observed before. That's interesting.
Well, and the other one is...
Is there something you make with that about that?
Well, one is you perceive it, and then in the last one, you experienced it. When Jesus says,
I see.
Do you phileo me? Yes, Lord, you've experienced that I phileo you or something. Cause
is that
goes,
gnosko? Is that gnosko?
I believe the last one's Peter says gnosko.
Okay, it's not epigenosko.
Where the first two times he uses a different word. Parita, what's there's another word for perception?
I have to say I don't know it. Yeah, I haven't looked it up. Not in front of me.
Well, the other thing is this is the condemnation that light has come into the world. Men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil.
Uh-huh.
That's agape.
Oh, that they love darkness?
Rather than light, rather than
desert evil. Yeah, you know, I read a book years ago by D.A. Carson called Exegetical Fallacies, and he mentioned that it is a fallacy to make a stark difference between phileo and agape, because sometimes the terms are used interchangeably. So, however, sometimes they're contrasted, so I guess it's a hard call to know when it's intended to be a contrast or when it's intended to be interchangeable. D.A. Carson in his book Exegetical Fallacies mentioned that there are times when Christians sometimes make a distinction between agape and phileo, which would be an invalid thing to do because the two are sometimes used interchangeably. I thank you for pointing that out, John. We need to talk to a few others before we run out of time here, which is going to be very quickly. Talk to Leo from Chula Vista, California. Leo, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Steve. Isn't the God of the same, the resurrection, the 3 days, three nights? I have read that it was a high feast.
Yeah.
And that means that there are many, other Shabbat, not just Saturday. Would that be possible that the Shabbat that they are talking is something that was not really Saturday, but maybe...
Yeah, that is a possibility. Yes, it is. What for our listeners who don't know what you're referring to, the Bible specifically says that when Jesus was on trial and later crucified the same day, that it was the preparation for the Sabbath day. It was preparation for the Sabbath. Now, preparation for the Sabbath is a term that the Jews used for Friday, because Saturday was the Sabbath. However, this was also Passover time. And Passover was one of three festival weeks in the Jewish holy calendar, which would not necessarily begin on the calendar day or on the day of the week the same every year. Sort of like our Easter it's always on Sunday, but it's like Christmas. Christmas is not always on the same day of the week. It might be a Wednesday or a Friday or Saturday, different years. Passover was that way too. Passover, because it was based on the cycles of the moon, not the sun, might occur on any day of the week, any given year. I mean, it would vary from year to year. Now, whatever day it was a week-long festival, and the first and last days of the festival were counted as Sabbaths, whether they fell on Saturday or not. Okay, so a week like that could have two Sabbaths. It could have the regular Saturday Sabbath, which, of course, was every Saturday. But if it was the Holy Week, it might have a Monday Sabbath or a Wednesday Sabbath or a Thursday Sabbath, because that could be the beginning of the festival week, and the first day and the last day of the week would be counted as Sabbaths. And therefore, some say that when it says that when Jesus was crucified, it was the preparation for the Sabbath. That means the day before the Sabbath. That wouldn't necessarily mean Friday, although the term usually meant that. In a special case like the Passover week, it might mean it was the day of preparation before the special Sabbath, the high holy day, the Passover week's beginning. Now, the argument goes like this, that week, that particular year, Passover began on a Friday, so that both Friday and Saturday were Sabbaths at that particular week. And when it says that Jesus was crucified on the preparation for the Sabbath, it doesn't mean on Friday preparing for the Saturday Sabbath, but rather on Thursday preparing for the special Sabbath that was occurring that year in that week, which was Thursday. So it'd be, Friday, which would be Thursday, would be his crucifixion. This can be confusing. Maybe that I make it more confusing than it has to be, but the point is, what you're saying is there could have been, if Passover began on a different day of the week that particular year, Saturday, there would have been two Sabbaths that week. And which one was the one that Jesus was crucified the previous day from is what is debated. And so that's one of the ways this matter is talked about. I appreciate that call, brother. Let's talk to James from San Diego next. James, welcome to The Narrow Path. You're on the same subject, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I was just going to mention that a really, really excellent book that I have that goes through all these dates, you know, the day of the week, the day of the month, and, you know, the year Christ was crucified and all that, is, I'm sure you've heard of it. It's called Chronological Aspects of the Life of Christ by Harold Honer. And it's really...
I don't have that one, no.
Oh, it's excellent. It is excellent. It's well worth having. And you know what? Even for a person who's not like a scholar, it's written in language that the average person can completely understand. Again, it's called Chronological Aspects of the Life of Christ by Harold Honer. It was originally published back in the 70s, and I believe he's had a couple revisions, you know, updates since then. But my copy is from 1977, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, and I was going to mention to you how you just mentioned about that verse in John 19:31, where it's called the High Day. Harold Honer makes the case that he believes that the reason it's called the High Day is because the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which came the day after the Passover, that was the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, And the right. Saturday Sabbath fell on the same day. And, for example, Matthew 28, verse 1, it says, and the Sabbath. So he uses the word plural. And, no, he mentions that, but he also mentions that the high day is because those two Sabbaths fell on the day of the Saturday Sabbath. In other words, the Feast of Unleavened
Bread. Okay, so in other words, this is still arguing for a Friday crucifixion.
Exactly. But you know what he goes through? He gives the pros and cons for the Wednesday. He gives the pros and cons for Thursday. Then he shows why he believes Saturday's got the strongest case. He goes into 3 days and three nights into the belly of the fish. I mean, he covers everything, you know. I mean, very, very complete, you know. So chronological
like
aspects
good book.
Of the life of Christ.
Okay. Thank you for the recommendation.
His name is
I've read good arguments.
Just H-O-H-N-E-R. H-O-E-H-N-E-R. H-O-E-H.
Okay.
First name Harold.
Yeah. I've read good arguments for the Wednesday and for the Thursday and for the Friday, but I've never seen them all put together in one book very well.
Yeah.
So
a couple other chapters he's got. He's got the not only the day, he's also got the day of the month, like Nisan 14, Nisan 15. He goes through all that. He's got the year of the crucifixion. He's got the duration of Christ's ministry, the commencement of Christ's ministry, what year did it start, how long was the ministry, was it 3 years, was it 2 years, was it 3.5, and he's also got the date of Christ's birth. Then his last chapter is on the 70 weeks of Daniel 9. So he's got a really, it's a full slate. And again, it's for written in layman's language.
Very interesting.
Have a good day, sir.
All right. I appreciate it, James. God bless you. Bye now. Well, I want to take Linda's call, but we're almost out of time, I'm afraid. I don't think we have more than about 15 seconds before the music begins to play, Linda. So I think we might have to just hold off on your call and hope that you'll call tomorrow. Because I hate to close the program when there's people waiting to talk, but there's that music, and that means I got to get off in 60 seconds. So my apologies, Linda. Could you please call tomorrow? We'll talk about whatever's on your mind then. All right. You've been listening to The Narrow Path. My name is Steve Gregg, and we're live Monday through Friday at this same time. Friday night, I'm going to be speaking. I've been asked to speak at the Good Friday service at the Temecula Community Church. That's at 6 o'clock this Friday night. I'll be speaking at the Temecula Community Church at an outdoor barbecue Good Friday service. The Narrow Path is listener-supported. If you'd like to help us pay the radio bills, we appreciate those who do so we can stay on the air. You can go to our website, thenarrowpath.com, and discover how to help us stay on the air financially. Thenarrowpath.com. Thanks for joining us. Let's talk again soon. How about tomorrow? God bless.
We invite you to join us in encouraging our on-air ministries. In fact, we're calling it Project Encouragement, and it only works with your help. If the program you just heard has blessed you, please call our comment line and tell them. That's it. We'll take all those recorded comments, get them into the hands of the ministry so they can be blessed by knowing how they are touching your life. Just call 800-227-2337, extension 311, and follow the prompts. If this program blesses you, bless them back with a personal word of encouragement. Please call right now, 800-227-2337, extension 311.
We expected a response to Project Encouragement, but we were not prepared for how many of you would call in, and we want to just say thank you so much. And we're already hearing back from our ministry partners how blessed they are by all of your heartfelt messages. If you haven't already, please share a word of encouragement for Steve Gregg on The Narrow Path by calling 800-227-2337, going to extension 311, and just follow the instructions from there. Or go to kbrt740.com for more information. Stay tuned for Joyce Meyer here on AM 740 KBright.
The Bottom Lines, Dave Householder.
We believe that these ideas, God's plan A in the Bible, and the vision of the founders is in the very DNA of the American fabric. All we have to do is awaken it. It's our true self, and we're trying to do that here on The Bottom Line.
Dave Householder and Roger Marsh on The Bottom Line, today at 3 on AM 740 KBright, the oldest and largest Christian station in Southern California, 50,000 watts strong. KBRT and KBRT HD Costa Mesa, and on the web at KBRT740.com.
Welcome to Enjoying Everyday Life with New York Times bestselling author Joyce Meyer. On today's program, Joyce will be teaching from her series entitled Let God Fight Your Battles.
In life, there are many battles that we will encounter. Some deal with our friends and family, others deal with health issues, and some with financial difficulties. But no matter how big the battle may seem, it's encouraging to know that Christ has given us power to win them. In today's teaching, Joy shares how you can secure real victory in life with a genuine relationship with God. Everything you'll hear today can be found in Joyce's four-part CD teaching, Let God Fight Your Battles. When you order today's offer, you'll also receive her book, The Battle Belongs to the Lord. Just visit JoyceMeyer.org and get your copy today. Now, here's Joyce with today's teaching entitled, Let God Fight Your Battles.
I wrote this down, and I drew a big purple circle around it, right there. A joyful person with a problem is a powerful person. A joyful person who has a problem is a very powerful person, because the joy of the Lord is our strength. It must make the devil almost ready for a breakdown. When he has done everything that he can possibly do to make us miserable, and we are still happy, loving people, enjoying life, and trusting God. Come on now. This is our privilege as believers in Jesus Christ. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't think that any of us can do this if we don't spend good quality time with God. You know, I'd gone through a period of my life several years ago where things had been going pretty good for a long time. And then I went through this period where I just couldn't seem to get happy. I mean, I'd wake up in the morning and think I'm not happy. I'd go to bed and think I'm not happy. I was just dissatisfied and disgruntled.